The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just finished a three-game series against the Houston Astros, winning two games out of three. They now stand at 67-59 on the season and occupy third place in the American League East, and they are currently three games out of a wild card spot. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing well. Coming off a nice series win against the Astros, you can't ask for much more than that. Even though we should have swept, but I'll take two wins.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda, but you're right. We'll take the two out of three for sure. People want to find you on Twitter. Where would they find you?
You can find me at N Diamond Media on Twitter. So it's just N Diamond Media. So you guys can find me there.
Awesome. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how you doing?
Living the dream. So, interestingly, non-baseball related, I got pulled over today, and I didn't think I was violating the law. I was on a road where trucks aren't allowed, but mine was under the weight, and anyway, I ended up being right. So the police officer let me go, and he was cool and all was good. But I'm used to being wrong so much on the podcast. So it was nice to have a W in a weird situation. You can find me at Cushman MLB. You can find us on Instagram. I've been messing around with TikTok. I haven't figured it out yet, but I think I'm figuring it out as I go. So we'll see. At Terry Talks Socks on there, if you want the visual of me. And we've been active on our Substack as well. That's our in-print content. So search Bastard Substack. And yeah.
Well, I was going to say that little situation you had getting pulled over, it was kind of a nice analogy for how sort of we do things on the podcast. You're causing trouble, but you end up being right. So, happens to us a lot on this show, I think.
I mean, I'll admit I was only like 90% sure. I was like, I was under the weight and I only had two axles. So I'm like, I should be all right here. But it worked out.
Well, good to see that you're not behind bars or anything. So, yeah. Not this time, at least. Yeah.
I think 2016 was my last ticket, so I'm working on a solid decade here.
There you go. Yeah, perfect. Well, as we said at the start, Red Sox do take two out of three from the Houston Astros. As Nick mentioned, it could have been a sweep, probably should have been a sweep, but it wasn't. Unfortunately, Monday night didn't go their way, but all in all, they still take two out of three from a playoff contending team. Houston Astros have been pretty hot here in the second half. They're probably going to win the West again. They're doing it all without even Kyle Tucker and, you know, Verlander kind of on his last legs, all that stuff. So you go into Houston, tough ballpark to win games against that team. You take two out of three. So, Terry, I'll start with you. Like, obviously, you know, we kind of go up and down on the show a little bit. As you said, we ride the roller coaster. We don't just, predict, we don't just say, oh, everything's going to be fine. We kind of just ride the wave as we go. Two out of three from Houston. That's a team you might see later on. How do you feel about it?
It was an interesting series. We didn't really have our best starters either, outside of maybe Houck, but Bayo didn't pitch. Crawford, you know, has been pitching better as of late till at least about the fifth inning or so. So it didn't really look like a good series on paper for the Red Sox. And Nick mentioned we should have swept, and that's true. We probably could have easily dropped game two and then lost the series as well. I felt like the finale today was the, that was, even though it was only a 3-run game, I mean, that was the one where we kind of won it somewhat handily. The Astros kind of blew, they had the bases loaded with only one out and kind of blew it. Bregman popped up, and then Bernardino got Alvarez on 3 straight strikes. So didn't expect the W, but we'll take it. It gets bigger next as we go, though, because if you can, say, take 2 out of 3 against the Diamondbacks, you've suddenly got 5 against Toronto. So you can stack some W's here and maybe get in it. The bad news is we're still 3.5 out. We didn't gain any ground.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the downside, right, is that you feel good about the taking 2 out of 3, but there's still that number 3 in front of the games back and the wild card thing, and that's really pretty much all you have a shot at this point. The division's probably out of reach. I don't think Baltimore's going to slip up that much. So it is going to get challenging, but as you said, you know, if you get past Arizona, the schedule does kind of lighten up. And as I pointed out before, Kansas City and Minnesota, 2 teams ahead of you in the wild card, they have tough September schedules. So it's not a given that they're going to stay where they are. So even though, you know, you're still 3 games out, taking 2 out of 3 and seeing, you know, what those teams have in front of them gives me at least a little bit of hope. So, Nick, how do you feel about that series heading into this weekend?
You know, the Diamondbacks are probably the hottest team in the league at the moment. They're winning right now. I just checked. The Royals are up 3-0 against the Angels, and the Twins are up big against the Padres. So it looks like we're not going to be gaining any ground today either. I still think it's going to be a tough uphill battle to climb and try to get into the playoffs, but there is a possibility still, and it's going to be fun to watch for the next few weeks while we have an easier schedule, and the Royals and the Twins have a little bit of a harder schedule. So I'm excited to see where we'll be at, and then, like, you know, beginning of September, and then we can really evaluate where we're at by then.
Yeah, absolutely. And at the end of the day, you're heading into September and you're still on scoreboard watch, which I think, you know, back in like May, June, we may not have thought we would be in that position. You know, we weren't sure if this team was going to contend this year. So at least being able to say you're scoreboard watching at this time of year is pretty good. Because there's a lot of teams that don't get to do that. So all in all, not too bad. So, but yeah, they do take 2 out of 3 from Houston. A lot of contributors in this series. So as usual, we're going to give you our top 5 for this series. So Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who's coming in at number 5?
Number 5 is a guy I kind of forced onto the list. We probably could have put 1 or 2 other people in that 5 slot, but I'm going with David Hamilton because I've kind of felt like this all year, but I feel like it's unequivocal now. I mean, Jarren Duran is like a god among men, and that is, you know, that is who he's been all season long. But the real hero to me is David Hamilton. We're not where we're at right now if David Hamilton isn't starting most of the games. He does sit against lefties, but he's been electric on the bases, over 30 stolen bases. He's still hitting at a pretty good clip, right around 260 or so. He hits for okay power. I mean, he's not a slappy contact hitter. He can hurt you so many different ways. And I really think he's been the difference maker. If Trevor Story is in that lineup every day, probably in the top 10 in strikeouts, I just don't think, I think we've got 3 or 4 less wins right now. And at that point, you are out of it. Hamilton's defense could be a little better, and that's where Trevor Story could kind of make up for it a little bit. But I just don't think it's, I don't think it's enough of a difference maker. David Hamilton is the guy that stepped up. He's been hitting in the two hole. Sometimes he hits lower in the lineup. You know, if Abreu's on, you know, he'll be up in the two hole. But if you would have asked me last February, what do I expect out of David Hamilton? I would have said 90% of the season in AAA and a total non-factor. And he's the one who stepped up.
He's been a difference maker for sure. Nick, what do you think about David Hamilton?
I kind of agree. If you asked me at the beginning of the season if he would have any sort of impact on this roster, I would say absolutely not. Or if he did, it would just be as a, you know, as a pinch runner or something like that late in the season. I like David Hamilton. He's made a great impact to this team. You never thought he would hit 8 to 10 home runs like he's going to end up this season with. He's batting 260. He's going to have 30-plus stolen bases. He's done an amazing job. I do like him better at second base than shortstop. I think everybody does. But he's done an amazing job filling in, and he might be part of this team long-term at second base. Who knows? I really doubt it, but he's played himself into at least the conversation to be the starting second baseman at least next year. But we'll see. I think it'll be some sort of platoon with him, Grissom, and whoever they want to stick there in the future, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Grissom. When that Chris Sale trade happened, when they traded Sale for Grissom, I thought, oh, well, there's your second baseman. Because Grissom showed well last year, like in the majors. He hit. You know, we all knew the defense was going to be a question with him, but at least he hit. And then he got here. He got hurt. He started missing time. The bat wasn't quite waking up the way they wanted it to. They tried out Emmanuel Valdez. I like Valdez, but he's kind of just trick or treat. He can hit a ball 450 feet, or he might strike out 8 times in a row. It's just, you never know with him, and his defense is not great either. So Hamilton really stepping up and taking over that role. And the fact that he's been moved between second and short, I think he is more comfortable at second base. I think we've seen that. But even at shortstop, he's done okay there. At the beginning of the year, it was a little bit tough. He, you know, it was, there were some brutal plays over there, but it could have been a lot worse. And you know, even this series, like you can see at second base, like the defense is improving. He had a ball that was hit kind of out of his reach. He kind of knocked it down, but he chased it into the outfield, picked it up, spun and threw, and actually got the runner. I don't remember who the runner was, but he got him on a bang, bang play. And, you know, Merlone talked about it, and Lou Merlone, of all people should know on the broadcast as a second baseman, said, you know, that's the key. It's you don't have to be Dustin Pedroia. You don't have to be, you know, the best defensive second baseman, but don't give up on the play. And that's what Hamilton did. He didn't give up on the play. He chased the ball into the outfield and was able to make a nice play and get the out. So the effort is always there with him, which I really like. And it's just so unexpected. When he first got here, I mean, you know, first couple of months that we saw him, I thought, man, this guy is infielder Billy Hamilton. Like, nice pinch runner. Yeah, he's got a ton of speed, but this kid's never going to hit. Now, all of a sudden, he's hitting 260, and he's hitting a little bit of power. Now, I don't expect that he's ever going to be a 15 to 20 homer guy. He might only hit 10 to 12 homers a year if you play him every day. But every now and then, he can run into one. It's kind of surprising. He doesn't look like the biggest guy, but he's got some pop in that bat, too. He's a little bit older, which, you know, we kind of talked about this with Duran, like in terms of how does he fit in the future? I think he's more a utility guy. He's more like your Brock Holt type, your infield Ref Snyder type, where he'll make the team, but he's not ever going to be like a starter. I think there's always going to be someone that's going to be just a little bit better than him, but he's still a valuable member to have on this team. And I hope that long-term they at least, you know, keep him around, see what they can get out of him. And who knows? I mean, maybe he does end up being just a really valuable bench piece. Maybe, you know, again, Trevor Story supposedly coming back. Maybe he's hearing the footsteps, right? He sees Trevor Story taking batting practice. He's starting to take live batting practice now. And Hamilton knows that his spot might be up. So we talked about this with Connor Wong, you know, a week or two ago, you know, Connor Wong hearing the footsteps of Kyle Teal. If that motivates him and gets him going, fine by me. You know, keep playing your ass off until someone takes a job from you. But he has been super valuable this year, no question. So all credit to him, because I did not think that he was this kind of player when he first got here. So huge.
Nick, I don't know if you're getting the messages, but your mute button has not been working.
I got it now. I'll figure it out for this next time here.
Gotcha. So another thing about Hamilton is he's never an automatic out. Like, when does he come up and you're feeling like, uh-oh? You know, I mean, some of these guys do go through spells, and, you know, Abreu's definitely gone through some. Wong can be painful for a series or two. O'Neill especially, and he was 0-7, by the way. But I just can't. Hamilton's just been so good. And when he gets on first, if we need him in scoring position, guess what? He's going to be in scoring position, just like Duran. It's automatic. So I really put most of the success on him. I mean, it's been all about the offense this year. The pitching was great the first couple months, but it hasn't been great ever since. It's been okay in spots, but the only constant is the offense has been bailing out the pitching, and David Hamilton's a big part of it. So I don't think we can. I mean, he's a bona fide major leaguer, and he's got a relatively long future ahead of him. Maybe as a super utility guy, maybe he's going to be the Brock Holt going forward, minus some outfield appearances, but he's been impressive. So
yeah, he absolutely deserves the credit. And, you know, him and Hamilton, or him and Duran, excuse me, are kind of like the Havoc twins. You know, their speed just causes so many problems. And like you said, he never feels like an automatic out, because even if he chops one into the ground, the defense has to be on their toes, because he's going to go flying down that line every single time. So that's a good problem to have, that even if he's, you know, not quite performing at the plate, he can still cause something with his speed. So all in all, he's just shown a lot this year, and it's a big credit to him for sure. So with that, we will move on to one member of the pitching staff who impressed us this week, and that's number four on our list, and that would be Chris Martin. Obviously a guy who has missed some time here in the second half, but he's back now, and he was important for you in the series. Pitched twice, once on Monday, once in the finale. Both were clean innings, struck out a couple of batters, you know, gave up a couple of hits on Monday, but ended up getting out of it and ended up, you know, nailing down the save in the finale because Jansen had pitched back-to-back nights, so he wasn't available. This is what you needed. You needed a guy like Chris Martin to get healthy again, get right mentally, come back, and be his old self. And I know we criticized Cora a week ago for not, you know, using him further in a game that they ended up losing, but he used him right this week. And again, it's just such a value to have. And I know that Martin was a guy that we looked at before the deadline and said, yeah, he's probably going to get traded, or there's at least a strong likelihood. Now that you're within reach of a wild card, him and Jansen still being here is very important, because we've seen the bullpen falter the last, you know, week or two. And this series, they actually were pretty decent. They weren't terrible. It was more just Jansen gave up a bomb. You know, it was sort of a bad blown save there. But for the most part, the bullpen actually righted the ship. And Chris Martin being a part of that is huge, because he's just an automatic eighth inning guy. You don't have to worry about him. You don't have to play matchups with him. He can go up against anybody and get you three outs pretty reliably. So great to see him back. Great to see him healthy again. And if this team's going to contend, if they're going to actually grab that wild card spot, they're going to need more games of Martin in the eighth, Jansen in the ninth. And if that combo can keep going, you know, that can save them a lot of games, because part of the reason they lost ground is they had, what, 14 blown saves in 12 games. It was like something ridiculous. It was like they set a record for the amount of blown saves they had after the All-Star break. So if Martin can come back and help stabilize that and prevent that from happening, that's huge. So big series for him. Good to see him back. Good to see him healthy. hopefully it remains that way through the rest of September and helps to win more games here down the stretch. So, Nick, what were your thoughts on Chris Martin this series?
So you can't say anything bad about Chris Martin since he's been on the Red Sox. You know, he's had a dominant year last year. He was elite last year. He's been not as great this year, but he's still been great or good, you know. Without him, this team would probably be, you know, 500, if not worse. He's been the most consistent reliever, not named Kenley Jansen. I know he's had a few missed stretches with the anxiety issue. He had a little of an arm issue too. But he's been so consistent, so nails all season. I know he's in his late 30s. He probably won't be back next year. But without him next year, I don't know where this team's going to go, where they're going to stabilize this bullpen, whether it's Hendricks or someone younger. Maybe Slayton will take a step up again. But Chris Martin is a very big part of this bullpen. And it's going to be – if the Red Sox get in the playoffs, it's because he is dominant the last stretch of the year.
Terry, what do you think?
He's been great, you know. I said in the last midweek, they've been saving the Red Sox the last few weeks. It's Jansen and Martin have just been the saving grace, and it really continued. Well, maybe Jansen had a blip, I guess, in game one, and it cost us because the Astros walked it off, but that's going to happen. I wouldn't, you know, a pitcher is going to blow a save here and there, but those two have been nails. And the crazy thing is you've got him and Jansen and even Garcia, who finally had a good series, very unsuspectingly, because he had an 11 something ERA this season against the Astros, having pitched in the American League West. But you look at those three, they're all 37 or older. And it's just, yeah. So I think with Martin and the other two, having that veteran presence is probably good for the team, good for the pitching staff as a whole, including the starters, just having them around. And I mean, Martin's making $8 million last year and this year. That's pretty good. That was a great investment. One of the few things Hein Bloom got right. And I hope we have him back. We're going to, instead of clown takes, we're going to do some freestyling about some of these players that have expiring deals and the likelihood of which ones could be back. So we'll discuss him a little bit more, but another good series, and if by some miracle we sneak into the playoffs, he'll be a big part of it.
Yeah, and all those guys you mentioned have playoff experience, which a lot of this bullpen and young pitching staff doesn't. So, yeah, it's a good point that, you know, if they do make it, if they do capture a wild card spot here, you're going to want veteran leadership in that bullpen to kind of keep guys level-headed and, you know, keep them on the level going into the playoffs. So definitely a big bonus there as well. Another member of the pitching staff also played pretty well this week. So Terry, who do we got coming in at number three?
That is going to be Tanner Houck, who aside from just one inning pitched very well, 8 strikeouts. I feel like I don't have his game logs up in front of me, but it's been a while since he's punched out that many. Last time he faced the Astros, he actually only struck out one batter and was pitching the contact pretty well the first time around, the week before last. And then this time they kind of sprayed some hits around, but not too bad. His best start in a while. And I mentioned earlier, Crawford seems to be figuring it out. It just seems like that third time through has been a bit of an issue for him, but they're both trending the right way. So we'll see if they can continue it here. Houck will be pitching this weekend against a red hot Diamondbacks team. So we'll see if he can keep it up. But the other thing too that I've kind of preached is that he's way past his innings. And at this point, I mean, you kind of do have to stretch him out. Eventually, he does need to be stretched out a number of innings if he's going to kind of be a mainstay, maybe perhaps like a John Lester type guy. I'm trying to get his count right now. Wow, he is up to 152 innings. That's Tanner Houck. So without looking, I would have guessed it was about 135. So when was the last time we had a Red Sox pitcher hit that?
It's been a long time. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to go back to,
I guess Pivetta has, but that's about it, and it's never pretty.
I was going to say either Pivetta or Price. That one year that Price had his head screwed on straight, he might have done it. But, yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's going to make, I mean, they're not even going to rest him for as long as we're within striking distance of that playoff berth there. So he could very well hit 190 or so, I'm thinking. He's got at least, what, 5 or 6 starts left, maybe 7.
Yeah, I think there's 37 games left. So if he starts every single one,
that's 7 starts.
7 starts. If he goes 6 innings each time, yeah, he's closing in on 200.
Yeah. Hopefully there's no lingering effects. I mean, we probably won't know until spring training, really. But yeah, that's surprising.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, your thoughts on Tanner Houck?
He's having some technical
problems. Technological problems here. Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I'm good now. Hold on. Yeah, my bad, guys. I'm getting stuck on the mute button. It's not unmuting, but I think I'm good now. So my thoughts on Tanner Houck. So you guys were bringing up about him getting close to 200 innings. Another thing we can look at, if we do get in the playoffs, is it's going to be close to 220 innings, most likely, if he can get to 2 starts. Or if they somehow do go deeper, it could be close to 230, 240, who knows. But my take on this start from Tanner Houck was, I think it was his best start in a while. Every time we looked at Tanner Houck's last starts, it feels like it's been like 6 innings, 3 runs, like 1 or 2 strikeouts, and he hasn't been getting a lot of swings and misses. But he had 8 strikeouts this time, and it was only 2 earned. He looked better. He had a lot more swings and misses. And another thing you can look at Houck is, I know at the beginning of the year we were looking at his ERA. It was, you know, low 2s. Up there with the ERA leaders in the AL. He's still 3rd in the AL in ERA, so he's still going to finish top 5 in Cy Young as long as he doesn't have any blowups. He's still going to get himself like some recognition in the Cy Young Award, so I still think that's pretty cool. Having a great year.
It's a good point. I mean, if they do make the playoffs here, he's your game one starter for sure. So, you know, if they make it past the wild card round, they make it to the ALDS, he's going to get a start in there. You might be looking at close to 210, 220 if they do go on a little bit of a run, which is, you know, again, it's a little bit more than the 190 we projected to finish the season, but that is a lot. That's a lot for a guy who's never done it before. I mean, you know, you go back through Tanner Houck's career, he's never even come close. I mean, it's, you know, his most innings pitched. Yeah, 120. So, like, that's a huge jump. For a guy, and I know he's, you know, 27, 28 years old, he's entering his prime. So, you know, that's when you should make the leap. But you're right. I mean, that's something that we won't know until he shows up for spring training next year. Does he recover well in the off season? Does he have a good winter and he comes back just as strong, ready to go? Or do we get to spring training next year and it's, you know, 2 weeks in? Oh, Tanner Houck's having elbow discomfort. Or, oh, they've had to shut down Tanner Houck for another week because a sore forearm. We don't know. So that's the only one sort of, you know, little crack in there that, yes, he's having a really good season. This last start was really great, but there is a bigger picture question there. And I think it's also why you haven't seen the Red Sox exactly race to get him an extension yet, because they probably want to know if it's legit too. Can he actually be stretched out? Can he be an ace for this staff? We don't know yet. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes with him. So, with that, we'll move back to the offense. Nick, who do we got coming in at number 2 on our top 5?
At number two, we have Tristan Casas. I know he's just came back from his long injury. He missed about 90-plus games. He had three hits this series with four RBIs and his first home run back since, I think, May. So great series for him. He had a long home run into the right field seats. You know, it was weird seeing him bat seventh against a lefty. I thought that was a little bit strange. Cora kind of easing him back in there against lefties. But I still would like to see him in the top of the order. At the end of the day, he's probably the third best hitter at worst on this team. You know, Devers, Duran, and then probably Casas. So I would like to see him in the top of the order. But I get what Cora's doing, easing him back in. But good series overall, and hopefully he can build off that and stay hot.
Terry.
Yeah, so he had five singles in the previous series. And let me see if he had some walks real quick. Yeah, so he only drew one walk previously, but was getting on base with a pretty good clip nonetheless. The three strikeout game in game one, obviously not great, but he was on base, let's see, six or seven times in the last two games. And that one home run, it was on an 87 mile per hour slider from Blanco. My only concern really about Casas is, can he catch up to the fastball and hit it for power? Because that's going to have more impact on his ribs. Like, if anything's going to bother him, it's going to be that. So I hope, A, I hope he can do it. And B, hopefully if he can't, he doesn't get exposed and then just get fed a steady diet of fastballs. But everything else still works. He's seeing the ball very good. He's controlling the strike zone. He is every bit as elite right now as he was in the second half of last year and, you know, the last couple of weeks leading up to the injury this year. He seemed to be really locking in. So that was nice to see. He did have one, you know, oopsie moment where he had there were two strikes on him, and then he had a pitch clock violation with the bases loaded, and that I think that came after the home run as well, but the offense came back to win the game nonetheless. But it was definitely an oopsie moment for a guy who usually seems to be pretty well in control while he's in that batter's box.
Yeah, it was definitely a series where you could see there was still some rust at the plate. I thought defensively, actually, he had a really good series. There were a lot of picks that he made at first base that were very impressive. I mean, you know, we almost debated putting Rafaela on the list this series, and part of it was because he was very good defensively at shortstop. But a lot of those throws he made, Casas had to help him out on the other end. He had to make a really strong pick to get those outs. And even the play that Hamilton made that I referenced earlier when we were talking about him, same thing. Casas had to pick it out of the dirt, and he did it every single time. So I thought defensively he looked very sharp. I kind of disagree in terms of I don't think he's got full command of the strike zone just yet. I think that's still – he's still getting used to that because, as you mentioned, like – the home run he hit was on an 87-mile-an-hour hanging slider. I mean, he crushed that thing, which, good, he should. But the strike zone violation or the, you know, the clock violation was a weird one. Now, someone did point out on Twitter that it happened after he hit a foul ball, and he did mention that that's when it's the most painful. After a foul ball, he's got to take a couple of extra seconds to kind of get his breath back, and I think he took a little bit too long. But there was also that at bat in the finale where, you know, and admittedly, it was a borderline strike call, but it was a pitch just outside the zone. He gets called for strike two. And he kind of looks back at the ump and he's like, really? Okay. Yeah, kind of disagrees with him. Steps back in the box. The pitcher throws almost the same thing, but even better. It was actually more in the strike zone, just still on the outer half. And Casas just looks at it for strike three. He gets rung up and he turns to the umpire, like arguing. And I'm sitting there going, dude, it was a better pitch than the one before. It was just, it was the same location, just closer to the strike zone. And Alex Speer actually tweeted out the game cast of it where they actually show where it was in the strike zone. Both pitches were borderline strikes. The one for strike two was a little bit further out, but the one for strike three was right in there, and he just looked at it. So I think what you mentioned, Terry, about him, can he catch up the velocity? I think that is still something that's going to take him a little bit of time. I think that just in terms of him recognizing it and being able to launch on it, that's going to take him some time because, again, a lot of his hits, you know, they came off of not like 99 miles an hour. It was a lot of breaking stuff, which is good. It's good that he's able to do that and he's able to get on base, like you said, and, you know, that's all good. But, yeah, I do wonder about the timing aspects and the strike zone control because down in AAA, you're not facing guys that are throwing, you know, the kind of stuff that you're going to see at the major league level. And, you know, we'll get into it in another show, but this Arizona series, you're facing some good pitching. So it's not going to slow down for him anytime soon. And that was the one concern. It's, you know, one of those things where I certainly criticized him for taking his time, not getting back with the team right away. I think Cora was frustrated, but this is part of it. Hitters are very picky about, well, my timing's not there yet. And, you know, I need to be able to time up these fastballs and, you know, the velocity at the major league level. I don't think Casas is all the way there, but he's still producing. And that's the important part is, you know, and I think that's what they had to drill home to him. And that's what made this series so important for him is that he's not all the way back. He's not 100%. He's, you know, and either mentally or physically, but just being in the lineup and being able to produce the way that he can on pitches that he can catch up to makes such a difference. So it was still a great series for him. I'm hoping that September he doesn't wear down too much. It's my only concern is that what if the pain really catches up to him and he can't handle it? Hopefully he can. Hopefully he toughs it out, you know, helps him get into the wild card a little bit here. But all in all, it's good to have his presence in there. And I know everyone kind of held like a mini funeral for Dom Smith when he got released, but having Casas in there is such a difference maker. As much as we like Dom Smith, as much as he did contribute, Casas is the real deal. So it's good to have him back, even if he's not 100%, and hopefully he gets there pretty soon.
He's not going to be, you know, legging out any doubles either, because there was one today in the finale. I forget exactly which at bat, and I think the ball even came home on the throw. And if it was anybody but Casas, the runner would have been on second. And we can't complain because obviously, you know, it's just kind of it's a bonus that we have him and that he has been productive. He drove in, he's 8-for-23, you know, overall. So he's hitting over 300 since he's come back and drove in 4 runs. And that home run in game two, I mean, essentially was the difference, really. You know, if that doesn't happen, we lose that game by one. And then today, I think we were already up when he drove in that run. But he's back and, you know, we hopefully he gets healthier. You know, this is a totally different injury, but I noticed when I sprained my ankle after like day two, for some reason, running on it helps, you know, it helps the recovery. So I don't know if perhaps playing will in a way expedite his recovery on the ribs. Again, totally different injury and not a very common one, but it's good to see him and he's a fun at bat to watch. He's next to Duran. He's probably my favorite because it's just, I like watching the chess match he has with the pitcher. And the other thing too, this series and the last one, especially terrible umpiring. And it was on both sides. You know, I don't know if any team benefited, you know, better or worse, but the umpiring's been bad lately.
Yeah, that's definitely true too. And, you know, in terms of his speed, I mean, even Casas without the rib injury, you know, always kind of ran like he had concrete in his legs. So, you know, he's never going to be the most fleet of foot. But you're right. I mean, even with, you know, especially that with a rib injury, it's going to take him even longer to get going. And I think it's a fair point. Like, it's a muscle injury. So if you get in there and you start, you know, playing ball and, you know, getting used to taking foul balls, getting used to contact, you know, eventually it's more of a mental thing. Like, the pain that he first experienced when he first got back on his rehab assignment, it's not going to feel as bad after 10, 15 games as it did game one. He's just going to get more used to it. The injury is not going to heal until the off season. So that's just the reality. So once he accepts that and kind of just is able to push through that, I think that if he can block it out, he'll be fine. So it's just a matter of him actually doing that. And that's why it was important for him to come back. So with that, we will round things out with number one on our top five. Nick, who do we got?
I think everyone would have picked Jaren Duran to be at the top here. He had 6 hits this series, 2 home runs, up to 17 homers for the season. So he's easily going to break that 20 home run, 20 stolen base mark. He might even go 20-20-20 and get 20 stolen bases, 20 triples, and 20 home runs. It's only been done, I think, 3 times ever. I think they said it on the broadcast today. It was Jimmy Rollins did it in his MVP season, and then 2 other older players did it way back in the day. I mean, if that happens, that's something you'll never see again, honestly. You know, how many times did he stretch a single into a double this series? I could think of at least 2. I feel like it was 3 at least. You know, the leadoff homers on the first pitch of the game. He's just doing everything right now. He's an exciting player. He's going to finish top 5 in the league in WAR. He's going to get MVP votes at this time. He's just a great all-around player, and he's finally getting the recognition he deserves. So this team goes as far as he goes.
Terry.
So he's 2nd in the league in doubles. And Alec Bohm is the guy ahead of him. And I didn't have that on my bingo card coming into 3rd base for the Phillies. But Bohm just always seemed like a guy who just wasn't quite living up to it. And that now he finally is. But Duran, 2nd in all of MLB. He's got 1 more than Bobby Witt. So it'll be interesting to see which one of those two ends up higher than the other on the American League side. J.J. Bleda is 6th overall, but 3rd in the American League. And he's only got 33. So they're kind of – it's going to be the Duran and Bobby Witt show as far as the doubles go. And Duran has 2 more triples than Bobby Witt at 13. I don't know if he quite gets to 20. I have a feeling he'll fall a little short, probably end up with 17 or 18. But Nick mentioned the fact that Duran is 5th in WAR, and you know, I've kind of been tracking that on the podcast over the last month. He's at a 7.3 WAR. Okay. The last time a Red Sox player exceeded 7 or more, that was Mookie Betts in his World Series. It was the World Series season, but that was also his MVP season. Mookie had a 10.9 WAR. So I don't think Duran can quite get that high. And, you know, he's got Soto, Henderson, Witt, and Judge ahead of him. But Mookie's 2nd best season in the WAR category was actually just last year with an 8.4 WAR. And I think Acuna was right around there as well. And I think Duran can eclipse that. And that's insane to me. Last year, I would have told you he was off the charts. Like, off the charts. I didn't expect this at all. I never thought he would take another massive step beyond that, but he has. The other thing, while we're mentioning Mookie, is Mookie was a 4th round draft pick. He wasn't like this coveted prospect right away. He didn't really have a big breakout until about Double A. And even then, I mean, nobody was thinking generational talent. Duran was drafted in the 7th round of, I think that was the 2018 draft. Don't quote me on that, but thereabouts. And he suddenly had a power surge in 2021 in the first half of that year in AA, and then went to Worcester, arrived in Boston, and really didn't do much his first season and a half. So it's crazy how these players, and I'm going to stop short for now on calling Durant a generational talent. If he puts together three or four more years like this, I think you can kind of get there. But it's crazy how we talk about the big three, the big three, the big three, the big three, and we just assume they're going to be these types of players. I think it's an extreme long shot that any of them do what Durant has done the last couple of years with consistency, with the same intensity, with the same 1,000% effort. It's a long shot to me. And earlier in the season, I was saying I thought Durant could be traded. You know, in April and May, I'm like, they should cash in on him. And then by July 1st, I'm like, you can't at this point. You'll never get equal value back. You could get a team's best hitting prospect and their best pitching prospect, and you're probably going to lose the trade, I would say. Some people might disagree, but I just think Durant is just that good. And then the last thing I'll say is he had a big controversy a week and a half ago, whenever it was. Nobody's talking about that right now. Nobody's talking about that. He was on base 5 times in game 2. 4 for 4 hitting, drew a walk there. The 2 home runs. I would say I just said I don't think he'll get to 20 triples. He would need 7 more to do that. I think he's much more likely to hit 13 home runs over this next 6 weeks. Not saying it's going to happen, and I'm not saying I would bet on it, but 2 home runs this series, some guys can go nuts in the second half. Remember, it seems like ages ago now, it was, 2017? J.D. Martinez gets traded from the Tigers to the Diamondbacks, and then in the last 2 months hit 28 home runs. So I'm just saying, it would be really impressive if he got there. But and Bobby Witt is out of his mind. So this won't be the MVP year for Durant. But man, to end with an 8 or 9 WAR is what's likely going to happen. That's insane.
I'm glad he mentioned Bobby Witt, because honestly, if it weren't for Bobby Witt, Jaron Durant, not an MVP year, but maybe batting title, he would be in contention for that. He's 3rd in the AL in hits. He's 1 behind Vlad Jr., who's probably going to slow down here in the second half because he's playing for nothing. Bobby Witt has 177 hits already. Durant's at 153, and Guerrero's at 154. So Bobby Witt's just playing out of his mind right now, which is unfortunate because you'd like to see Durant kind of get rewarded for having a great season. He probably won't in any way, but maybe a silver slugger or something, but that's probably it. No, he's just, he still remains incredible. And I think the point you mentioned about he got suspended, he did something wrong, he owned up to it. And my biggest concern after that was, you know, what if he gets inside his own head? What if that incident really kind of messes him up for the rest of the year and he's beating himself up and he feels bad? You know, he was on such a high before that. And he was, you know, he basically became the team's most beloved player. And then he did something like that. And look, we talked about it at the time, and I still maintain that probably 80% of the fan base doesn't care and kind of forgave him and moved on. And there's maybe like another 10% that are iffy, and then there's another 10% that hate his guts now, right? Like, it's just, it's not 50-50. It's, you know, it's much, much more people sort of wrote it off and said, yep, he screwed up, he apologized, who cares, right? But for a guy like him who has been open about mental health issues, about being down on himself too many times. I did wonder, like, you know, is this going to negatively affect him? And here he comes in this series, just guns blazing. Leadoff homer, you know, the finale game stretches a single into a double. It immediately ignites the offense in a game where he knew he needed it because he had Chris Wall on the mound. So it's just everything he does is so important to this team. And I'm also glad you mentioned the big three, because there's been a lot of talk about, well, now it's a big four, excuse me. God forbid I forget about Christian Campbell, the next Alfonso Soriano over there. Now it's a big four, and this is what I caution people all the time. Be very careful when you tweet out something like, I would trade Jaren Duran to make room for Roman Anthony. Okay, if you want to do that because Roman Anthony had one good week in AAA, that's fine. But look at what Jaren Duran is doing at the major league level for now basically two seasons, and you have no idea what Roman Anthony's going to do when he gets up here. We hope he can hit. We hope that he produces at the major league level. But for all we know, he can't. We've seen it time and time again. These big-time prospects come up to the major leagues, and they flame out. Nothing happens. So that's where I caution fans, like, don't just look at his age and say, we have to trade him. No, you don't. You have so many years of team control with this guy. There is no impetus to get rid of Jaren Duran at all, in my opinion. So I think that he's just way too valuable. And he's honestly the kind of player where until his value starts to decrease, I'm not getting rid of him. And I'm actually at the point with him where I say, let his value decrease and then whatever, trade him for peanuts. Like, I'm not worried about maximizing the asset. I'm worried about getting the most out of the asset. Because I think Jaren Duran, if this team adds a little bit in the offseason and, you know, tweaks the roster a little bit, he could be a major part of you going on a World Series run. That's how much I respect the player, because he's the quintessential leadoff man. Again, if it weren't for Bobby Witt, he's winning the AL batting title this year. And half the fan base wants to trade him for a 20-year-old who has never had a major league at bat, which is crazy to me. So I would rather just hang on to Duran. Don't even worry about trading him. Just keep him in that leadoff spot and get the most out of him in his prime years. These are the prime years for Major League Baseball players. Between age 27 and 32 is basically the prime. So keep him. You don't have to pay him big bucks. He's not up for free agency. He's not up for a major contract. You can give him a sort of a Rafaela type extension, not 8 years, but you know, you can work around it and keep him here for his prime. And then when he's done, he's done. Because we've talked about it on this show, like, as much as we love him, he's a guy who relies a lot on speed. Once that speed starts to go, and it will, once he gets into his 30s, what kind of player is he going to be? Now, the power output is starting to change my mind, because 2 months ago, I would have said, yeah, no, once the speed goes, he's not going to be worth it. But if he's starting to hit for power now, he might be buying himself a longer MLB career than people initially gave him credit for. So I'm at the point now where, in my mind, the big four have to prove themselves to me before I'm getting rid of a guy like Jaren Duran, because he's way too valuable to this team. I mean, basically, like, if you were to ask this season, who's the Red Sox MVP? It's a three-horse race: Duran, Devers, or Houck. It's one of those three. Because Devers has been consistent all season long. Houck's been your ace, but Duran's been your catalyst. He's been the guy that ignites the offense. He's been the guy that gets it going. And he showed it again this series, a series that you desperately needed to win. You needed to win at least 2 out of 3. And he was a big reason why he did it. So, again, it's just another cautionary tale. I know people think I hate prospects. I don't. But I hate the idea of trade away all your good MLB talent for prospects that you've never seen take an MLB at bat before. Like, that's what I'm trying to caution people of. Duran is too good. Do not just wittingly trade him away.
I did some comparisons between Duran and Mookie just a minute ago, but if the Red Sox ever in our lifetime play October baseball again, who profiles better, Jaren Duran or Mookie Betts? It's a no-brainer. I am going with Jaren Duran. I've never even seen him. We've never seen him play in the month of October. And you know he would be... He would end up on the FBI top 10 most wanted list. He would be that deadly and that, you know, chaotic to other teams. And he thrives in it. Like, he went from kind of being afraid of the moment to owning the moment to just being a guy possessed in that batter's box. Like, there's nobody I trust more, including Devers. And Devers is high up there for me. In a big spot, Devers is going to be an October god also, but Jaren Duran is just a beast. How many outfielders have we had that have just been studs in the month of October throughout the World Series era? To me, it's Manny. It's just Manny. I mean, Ellsbury was okay. I'm not saying he wasn't, but.
Yeah, it's Manny, and then that one year that J.D. Drew decided to pull his head out of his ass, and he was actually pretty good in the playoffs. But, yeah, other than that, it's been Manny, yeah. And I look at Duran as, like, in terms of fear that you put into the opposing pitcher, he reminds me, and it's a weird comparison because they're not even same position. They don't bat from the same side. It reminds me of Altuve. Like, Altuve has hit leadoff at times for the Astros because he can do that. He can just step in, first pitch, bang, homer. And it's like, oh, we're in trouble. You know, like when Altuve's going well, it's the kind of thing where you're like, we're not going to beat the Astros. Even though Yordan may not hit, Bregman may not hit, if Altuve's going nuts, we're not going to beat them. That's how Duran can be for this team. Like if he's going nuts, the other team just looks at him and goes, what do we do? We can't pitch around him because he'll steal bases. We can't even like try to pitch him in the dirt because he'll beat everything out. He stretches singles into doubles, doubles into triples. And oh, by the way, if you leave one over the plate, he'll hit it 500 feet. Like, what are we supposed to do against this guy? So that's the kind of menace he can be. It's really something to watch.
Both of his home runs this series were actually opposite field as well. So he can put the ball almost anywhere he wants to. And he let off, I think it was games 2 and 3 with a double and came home both times. So I figured after last season he would be somewhat of a force this year. I just didn't think he would like be on the edge of insanity like he is.
Yeah. Nick, any final thoughts on Duran?
He's on mute.
Still on mute.
You're good now.
Yeah, we got you. Yeah.
Like Terry said, after his season last year, you know, he kind of had that foot injury at the end. I actually didn't expect him to be this good. I kind of thought last year would be his ceiling. He'd bat about 270. I don't think he would ever have more than 15 homers. You know, I always knew his speed was there. I knew he had 30, 40 stolen base potential, but I never thought he'd be flirting with 25 home runs and stealing 40 bags and batting 300 and having 870 OPS like he has. He really reminds me of Dustin Pedroia's 2008 MVP season. He's got really similar like on-base percentage. He's actually slugging a little bit higher than him that season. You know, they both had about 870 OPS. They're both going to have about 50-plus doubles, lead the league in doubles. So they have a very similar season going on right now.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and it's, again, just you never knew he'd be this dynamic, but he's really reached that level. And I just – at this point, I don't know why you would even consider taking him out of this lineup or substituting from anyone else, you know, as good as your prospects are. But this guy – can lead you to the playoffs, and this guy can win you playoff games and playoff series. That's how good he is. So it's kind of remarkable that, like, you know, there's a reason why Rafi Devers wasn't on our top five. He had a very quiet series in Houston, like very quiet, and it didn't matter. You still won 2 out of 3 because guys like Duran took the mantle and said, oh, okay, I'll take over. Rafi's being quiet. All right, I'll just lead off every game with a home run or a double and get it going. So to have a guy like that hitting leadoff for you is massive. So
it's crazy how Devers just completely owns the Yankees, but gets owned by the Astros. And that Astros pitching staff has turned over a ton. So it's not like it's the same three guys over and over getting him. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's weird. He does go quiet in Houston.
It must be their game planning or whatever. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, they know how to pitch him, I guess, for sure. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. By the way, quick note, we did mention before that we're speculating who was the last Red Sox pitcher to break 200 innings in a season. And our friend Steve actually found it for us. It was Chris Sale back in 2017, 214 innings. And if you, again, like I guess Price, like I would never have guessed Chris Sale, but then again, Chris Sale is probably going to win the NL Cy Young this year. So he's just kind of a weird dude all around. So there we go. So with that, we will wrap things up here. Keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We'll be giving our predictions for the Arizona Diamondbacks series coming up this weekend. And we also have a little bit of a different show coming for you after that. No clown takes this week. We're actually going to be looking at some of the Red Sox pending free agents and who do we think is coming back and who do we think is walking on their merry way. And it's not just the big names like O'Neill, Jansen. We're going to go into some of the other guys too, some names that you maybe hadn't thought of before. So we'll be breaking down all of that for you as well. So keep an eye out for that episode too. So everyone have a great weekend and we will talk to you later. Take care.